Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the National Toy Hall of Fame has three new members, a doll, a game, and a sort of writing utensil. We'll find out what they are and what put them over the top, and we'll invite you to share your favorite toys of all time coming up. First, shortly after Election Day, when it became clear that Joe Biden was in position to win the presidency, conservatives were fearful the country would take a sharp left turn and undo the policies of President Trump. Among the big concerns were things like the Green New Deal, packing the U.S. Supreme Court, statehood for Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia, and others. But our guest conservative columnist wrote in a recent piece, "Chin up, the next 4 years might actually turn out to be much more moderate. That depends in part on the Georgia Senate runoff elections." You can join in at 800-642-1234. What would you want to see from a Biden administration? Are you hoping the U.S. racks up a bunch of progressive changes or doesn't change so much under a Democratic president? If a Senate remains in Republican control, how should they approach the new president? What issue are you most concerned about? COVID, the economy, healthcare, climate change, something else? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Brad Slager writes about politics and the business side of the Hollywood industry at places like Red State, Hot Air, Twitchy, The Federalist, and elsewhere. He co-hosts the podcast The Culture Shift and Disasters in the Making. He wrote about the incoming Biden presidency at Town Hall. Brad, thanks a lot for joining us today.
No, I appreciate it, Rob. Thank you for the time.
Well, I don't like to put words in anybody's mouth, but I think it's fair to say you're not necessarily excited about the prospect of a Biden presidency. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, given that I write at conservative outlets, it's not a big mystery. I was not a big fan of Biden, but I mean, at the same time, I think it's manageable. And once we ever do get resolution to this whole voting thing, then we know where we stand. Right now, there's a little bit too much flux going on, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a big question here is, of course, what happens in the Senate? You wrote the piece kind of framed around the idea of a Biden presidency, but Republicans keeping control of the Senate. And in that, what seems like pretty substantially likely outcome, what is your message to fellow conservatives about what the next 4 years might look like?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of an overemphasis on the solitary office. I mean, of course, the presidency is important and drives much of the country. But at the same time, you know, when you've got checks and balances in place, which we do have, because even though Biden won the presidency, this was actually a very good election for the GOP. I know a lot of people in the media and such wanted to try to call it a death knell for the Republicans, except, you know, they made some gains in the House. They did pretty well in state houses as well. And as long as they retain the Senate, then I think we have true checks and balances going on. So it's not a big panic button moment.
Oh, I mean, I think a lot of the media has been pointing out the big and I think unexpected by Democrats failure to gain seats, not only fail to gain seats, but lose seats in the House. Definitely a split decision I think we have here.
Yeah, and I'm down here in South Florida. It was really kind of a shockwave felt by the Democrats because down in Dade County, the Latin American vote was very heavily in favor of Trump over 2016. He made significant gains there. We took a couple House seats in South Florida for DC. And, you know, overall, I think the GOP showed some strength. And it really is a bit of an anomaly to see a Democrat get elected with such a strong GOP presence everywhere else.
So I listed a few of the things you pointed out in your piece, potential Democratic policy items, especially supported by, I guess, the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party that Republicans and conservatives are particularly worried about. What stands out to you as the top worry of conservatives under a Biden presidency?
I think court packing probably was the biggest one. You know, that's something that was brought up repeatedly during debates. Biden always tried to avoid a strong answer, which pretty much indicated what his intentions would be there. So I think it's pretty significant to maintain the Senate in GOP hands, let Mitch McConnell still run that judiciary so that he can work at preventing that sort of massive renovation of the Supreme Court. And then, you know, apart from that, the Green New Deal, of course, is something that everybody's kind of focused on. But I'm not as worried about that because that's going to have to go through a lengthy process in the House. And when you have enough GOP seats that were picked up this time, it's not going to pass through very cleanly, if at all. So don't think that's as much of a concern. I think the courts, and to a lesser extent, the statehood for Puerto Rico and D.C. has always been tabled as a possibility as well.
Talking to conservative columnist Brad Slager, he wrote a piece soon after the election at Town Hall saying, conservatives don't worry so much about a Biden presidency, especially if Republicans keep control of the U.S. Senate. Still an open question at this point. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you want to see from a Biden presidency? What do you fear to see from a Biden presidency? How do you think Biden and a likely Republican Senate, though, again, asterisk there, should work together? Or do you not want to see them work together? 800-642-1234. Brad, obviously a lot of people who voted for Republicans or Democrats here want their side to hunker down and not so much compromise or cooperate with the other party. What do you think of the notion, though, that this idea that we have likely, we for sure have divided government given Democratic control of the House, probably Republican control of the Senate, that people want to see both sides not hunker down and actually try to meet halfway, at least on some significant issues like COVID and the economy and things like that?
Yeah, I think that's kind of more of a realistic. I think, you know, once, let's just, you know, say Biden is the president, the main focus is going to be on COVID response, see what's going to happen there. That's going to be kind of where the thrust of things are. And we've already seen problems with that. I mean, the last couple relief bills that have come through both the House and the Senate, they haven't really been able to agree on that too well. Beyond COVID, though, frankly, if there's any kind of loggerheads going on in D.C., somebody like myself, I don't see that necessarily as bad news. If you could slow down government, I'm not going to complain too much about it. So outside of the necessary stuff, COVID response, budgetary issues, I don't have a problem with roadblocks going up one way or the other, really.
Bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. You know, I felt hopeful when you said that a Republican was not feeling so afraid of Joe Biden being president, especially given that he's pretty much a moderate centrist, as far as it seems to me. Republicans don't seem to be ever debating in a logical and genuine way, and I was hoping that's what your guest was going to be bringing back. But it sounds like more what he wants to do is just maintain a Republican control of the Senate so he can block everything Democrats want to do, and that does not seem like finding the middle ground to me. That does not seem like debating with genuineness and a clear conscience.
John, thanks for the call. First of all, to John's first point, Brad, he's saying Biden is more of a moderate Democrat, and certainly compared to a lot of the Democratic primary field, he was not the first choice of a lot of the left and progressive wing of the party.
Well, I'd hedge on that only because I did watch the Democrat debates, and when there was a full field, Joe Biden was definitely moving further and further left to appeal to, you know, the Bernie Sanders voters and such. And he was making some, you know, pretty wild proposals as far as left-wing politics go. And even, you know, Kamala Harris, the vice president, remember we saw an interview with her where she was proclaiming she wanted to bring an end to things like personal health care insurance and things of this nature. So, yeah, I mean, to say Biden is a centrist is a little stretch. I'll say maybe most centrist of the Democrat field. But yeah, he was definitely out on the left wing during the debates.
And then John raising concerns about what he was pointing to was maybe Republican obstructionism under a Biden presidency. But it sounds like you're saying earlier, you're okay with a little obstruction.
Yeah, it's not an automatic no as well. It's just more a matter, you know, if Joe Biden's going to table some of those left wing policies, obviously a GOP Senate is not going to play along necessarily either. So, you know, I think it's on a case by case basis when you look at these things. And when it comes to things like court packing and, you know, his energy issue, which he, you know, at one point wanted to say it wasn't part of the Green New Deal, but on his own election website said the Green New Deal is the framework of his energy policy. He was at the debate saying he wanted to end fracking outright and things of this nature. So, yeah, there are some rather left-wing policies he's forwarded, and I'm pretty sure those are going to meet opposition in the GOP Senate.
Thanks for the call at 800-642-1234. We're looking at what a Biden presidency could look like with a potentially likely Republican Senate. Brad Slager is with us. He writes about politics and the business side of Hollywood at Red State, The Federalist, and elsewhere. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you hope to see from the Biden administration over the next 4 years? What do you worry about from it? What issues do you want to see focused on? What do you want to see the relationship between the president and Congress look like in the next 4 years? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're talking about what an incoming President Biden administration might look like with Brad Slager. He writes about politics and the business side of Hollywood at Red State, Hot Air, The Federalist, and elsewhere. He co-hosts the podcast, The Culture Shift and Disasters in the Making. Brad wrote a piece at Town Hall soon after the election saying a Biden presidency wouldn't be the disaster that a lot of conservatives are worried about, especially if Republicans keep control of the Senate. Still have to look to the Georgia runoff elections in January. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. What are your hopes or worries over a new administration? What do you want to see from the Senate and Senate Republicans if they end up keeping control? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go back to your calls now. Lisa is with us in Madison. Lisa, hi.
Hi. In regard to court packing, aside from the fact that at different points in our history, we did have more than 9 judges on the court, I would contend that Mitch McConnell is engaging in court packing in regard to the federal courts, even ignoring hundreds of bills, legislation on his desk to fill the courts. So that really is court packing as well.
Lisa, thanks for the call. I've seen people refer to it more as court stacking, I guess. Brad, packing usually implies increasing the number of judges on a Supreme Court or elsewhere. But people pointing toward running out the clock on Merrick Garland and things like that is part of an ongoing escalation here that's led to at least some calls for court packing. What do you make of that back and forth?
No, I'd agree with your assessment there. It's not so much packing as much as it is, filling seats with party-friendly incumbents. So whoever is in charge is going to be making those moves. And McConnell has been, hitting the throttle as far as judge appointments go from pretty much day one. But as far as when you get to packing the Supreme Court, that's a completely different animal because you're actually renovating the Supreme Court from where it's been in place, I think, since the 1800s, let's say. So that's definitely an alteration of the norm.
I've seen, thanks for that call, Lisa. I've seen arguments, Brad, from across the political spectrum that say, hey, you know what? We've given too much power to the Supreme Court in some ways. That's raised the stakes here and made it such a big issue. I don't know. What do you think? Is it worth reevaluating how much say the court system has over things passed by Congress and the president?
Well, it's always been a case. I mean, both parties could make that call too, because there's a lot of issues over the years where you could talk about legislating from the bench and having new policy being read into the Constitution that's not necessarily there. And that's where appointments come into play the most. Who you put in, how much fidelity they have to the Constitution, things of that nature. But that's all party specific as well. That's when they say elections have consequences. If a party's in power and they get to seat on the court, they're going to do that. I mean, I know there's been a lot of consternation about some of the recent appointments, but they've all been in line with the Constitution. Even the Merrick Garland situation was one where it wasn't the first time. Anytime you've seen two different parties in the White House and the Senate, there has been those contretemps when it came to appointments. It hasn't been an automatic push through. So, it's not commonplace, but it's also never unheard of. It was pretty specific as far as who was in charge.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to conservative columnist Brad Slager, looking at the prospects for a Biden presidency, possibly Republican control of the Senate continuing. And he wrote a piece lately saying, if that is the outcome, fellow conservatives, things might not be so bad in that scenario. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. We've got Debbie with us in Maquonago. Debbie, hi. Are you there, Debbie? I don't think we have Debbie. Let's try Tom in Madison. Tom, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First of all, it would be very nice to have a stable, non-narcissistic person in the White House. And I'm hoping that might inspire Republicans to actually do things with a backup plan. I'm somebody who gets their health insurance from the ACA. I'm a sole proprietor business. And I'm very nervous about this repeal without having any replacement. And I see the same thing happening across the board coming out of the Paris Accords without a backup plan, backing out of START, the INF, the Iran deal, without any kind of backup plan. It'll be nice to get back to a responsible Republican Party if possible.
Tom, thanks for the call. Brad, what do you think?
Well, you know, I hear that quite frequently. I do believe there's a bit of an overemphasis on the personality of Donald Trump, too. I mean, whenever I'm looking at a presidency during an election, I'm not picking based on personality. It's who's going to end up delivering party policy that agrees with my views. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not any person in a love affair with Donald Trump. So he's, you know, managed to put people in place that agree with my philosophy. So that's where my support lies. I mean, as far as alternative plans, I think on a case-by-case basis, it's a little bit different. I mean, as far as the healthcare insurance goes, yeah, we'd all love to see the perfect implementation of a plan replacement. And I think they did have one in play. It was just a matter of getting through some of the offices and getting a plan drawn up. As far as the Paris Accord goes, I don't see the problem there where we pulled out and our greenhouse emissions have actually dropped since that occurred. So there's not really any kind of detrimental effect to that taking place outside of saving us trillions of dollars in responsibility that wouldn't have any other effect that we already saw. But yeah, it's, you know, you always want to see a perfect replacement if that's at all possible. I don't argue that point too vehemently, but it's, I would say don't focus so much on the individual as much as on what can the party do as a whole.
Thanks for that call. Same with the Affordable Care Act. I mean, you mentioned the effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act ended up falling short under Republican control of both chambers and the White House. Oh, we've got the Supreme Court case. Who knows what's going to happen there? But even supporters of the Affordable Care Act say, you know, this thing isn't perfect. It needs some tweaks. Do you think after all the years of back and forth on that, there's an opportunity here to adjust the Affordable Care Act as it stands now?
I'd say it's possible, but it's really going to that'll determine more what we see following the finalization of these elections. You know, once we get everybody in place in the chairs and they can start hammering things out, you know, it's there's one dividing difference, and that's mostly that conservatives want to do away with ACA because they just saw all the deleterious effects that it had once it was implemented. And I understand people on the left want it for their reasoning as well. So this is one of those issues that needs middle ground, that needs to be hammered out on both sides. It was pretty much forced into place by one party. It has been rolled back to a certain degree by the other party. So there has not been that agreement yet that I've seen from both parties on this particular issue.
Let's bring on, I think we have time for one more caller, maybe two, but Tyler is with us in Green Bay. Tyler, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Tyler?
I wanted to talk about how I think we have this idea that our country is very divided in a lot of ways and how close a lot of these elections are, not just at national levels, but local levels, too, that I think we have a lot more in common than we think, and that this would be a good time, especially if we have a divided government, to work on compromise and work on things that people agree with and move forward, as opposed to focusing on partisan dividing and trying to, you know, me against you kind of politics.
Tyler, thanks for the call. We touched on that a little earlier. Brad, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I think the divisiveness in the nation is a bit overhyped for two reasons. One is the media. The second is social media. you know, just whenever there's any kind of conflict on one of those platforms, it just gets magnified beyond its reality. So, you know, you could go on social media and get into 17 arguments inside of an hour, and then you can walk out on the street and have a conversation with people, and it's actually civil, and you see some real conversation take place there. So I think that's the main difference we're looking at. Yeah, with the elections being as close as they are, that's indicative of it. We're not, you know, it's not as cut and dry as everybody wants to say it is. The Democrats are now in control. The GOP is dead. Nah, not really, because there were gains on both sides and nobody really came out far ahead this election. So yeah, there is, I think, room for negotiation and a need for it, quite frankly, in a lot of issues.
Tyler, thanks for that call. Just in our last few moments, Brad, what are you watching for in Georgia now with the Senate races? I won't ask anybody to predict an outcome, but what do you have your eye on there?
It's really a tough call because it keeps evolving. You know, I've seen in the media, they keep wanting to insist there's no shenanigans taking place. There's no voter fraud taking place, even though story after story keeps percolating up and, you know, they're finding batches of votes here. There's this mistake taking place in a precinct. So predicting it is a complete toss up right now because the evidence keeps changing on almost daily basis. So the runoffs are going to be something everybody watches. I'm almost kind of leaning at it being a split, one for each party. I just, you know, I don't think Ossoff really has the experience and everything needed to win a seat. But, you know, again, this judging that state has been impossible for the last 3 weeks.
So yeah, I'm not going to bet money either way. Brad, thanks a lot for joining us.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, Rob.
That's Brad Slager. He writes about politics and the business side of the Hollywood industry at Red State and elsewhere. He co-hosts the podcast, The Culture Shift and Disasters in the Making. Talk to him about a piece he wrote at the website Town Hall about what an incoming Biden presidency could look like, assuming Republicans hang on to control of the Senate. Coming up after the news, we'll take a look at the newest members of the National Toy Hall of Fame, and you could share your all-time favorites. You can even get started right now, if you'd like, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 8 on the morning show, Kate Archer-Kent talks to a psychologist about the impact of COVID-19 on our relationships. And you can join in with your experiences and questions. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Now, the folks at the National Toy Hall of Fame are celebrating some new members this month. The honorees were chosen from a field of 12 finalists. Those included Light Bright, My Little Pony, and Yahtzee. In the end, though, only 3 were inducted. Here's one of them. You ever play this at a party?
Jenga, Jenga.
You take a block from the bottom and you put it on top. You take a block from the middle and you put it on top. That's how you build a tower. You just don't stop. You gotta build that tower putting blocks on top. And it teeters and it totters as you build it all up. It weebles and it wobbles. But
that ad should be in a Hall of Fame all its own. In addition to the game Jenga, the class of 2020 included sidewalk chalk and the groundbreaking doll Baby Nancy. You can tell us your stories about those toys and others at 800-642-1234. Were you a fan of Jenga? Did you have a Baby Nancy doll? If so, what did it mean to you? Did you have fun marking up the concrete with sidewalk chalk? Has that been a big toy this pandemic year? And apart from those, what toys or games would you want in the National Toy Hall of Fame? There's a good chance they're already there. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Chris Bench is the chief curator of the National Toy Hall of Fame at the Strong Museum of Play in Rochester, New York. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Rob, it's great being with you.
Well, a strong list of finalists here. What were your thoughts on this year's class of potentials and the finalists?
You know, you sort of couldn't go wrong with our 12 finalists this year, but the 3 that wound up getting inducted are just perfect for where we're at in 2020.
let's start with that sidewalk chalk, because I know it's been popular with kids for a long time. I think there was probably a run on it early in the summer. It was a great outside activity. You could do it with other people, but distanced. Talk about a little bit about the history of sidewalk chalk and why it made the list.
Well, sidewalk chalk, not chalk in general, has been around for artwork and creativity since people lived in caves. So it's got a lengthy history. And I think earliest on, kids absconded with the schoolroom chalk, but the kinds of colored chalk with great consistency, with great possibilities for artistry or your most deluxe hopscotch setup you've ever had, it is so perfect now. And it is something I never expected to see in the way that I have seen it in my neighborhood this year.
Yeah, I saw a lot going out for walks, a lot of great chalk art out there. I suspect some adults got in the game, too, this time. What do you think?
I think adults enjoyed it, too. But what impressed me was kids writing love notes of enthusiasm for their teachers. Who knew that they would feel that way until they couldn't go to real school?
That sidewalk chalk, another inductee is, we heard the ad there, the game Jenga. And toys is broadly defined. It includes games. What put Jenga over the top this year?
You know, Jenga is a game that kids and grownups can play on a level playing field. And maybe even kids have a little advantage with their small
fingers,
agile hands. I know that I feel pretty clumsy playing Jenga, but it's a way, especially in 2020, as we look for analog ways to gather our families, our households together, and it's a way that people can get together and play and have fun, and they get it instantly.
We're talking about some of the greatest toys of all time with Chris Bench from the National Toy Hall of Fame. They've got three new inductees. You can join in with your favorite toy, your favorite toy memory from childhood, or one you've loved sharing with your kids. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Before we go to our callers, let's talk about the third inductee. And this was a groundbreaking doll, Baby Nancy. Tell us a little bit about it.
Baby Nancy is definitely the least well-known of our three inductees this year. But in 1968, when she came out, she was a breakthrough as a baby doll who had a dark complexion and actual features of Black children, rather than just being a white doll that got extra tint put into the mix.
And this was groundbreaking, right? It introduced this, I guess, this concept that there was a market for dolls that weren't white.
That's right. Kids had always craved dolls that looked like them, but they'd never had the commercial opportunity to get those before. So Baby Nancy proved that there was a market for it, there was a demand for it, and in a lot of ways, she laid the groundwork for all the multicultural dolls that have followed ever since.
And Chris, remind us of the role of the National Toy Hall of Fame and what you're looking for when you bring new toys and games into the mix.
Sure. Well, the National Toy Hall of Fame celebrates classic toys that have stood the test of time. So these are toys and games that have recognition value. Even if you didn't have a Jenga set or a hula hoop or a teddy bear or a radio flyer wagon, you would recognize them right away. Second, these are toys that have longevity. They've been around on the market at least 20 years. So kids and their parents could have grown up with them together. And these are toys that have great play value. They are not the ones that get shoved under the bed or in the closet. They're the ones that encourage us to socialize and learn and create and imagine. And finally, there are some toys that get in for a bonus category of innovation or breaking ground. So Baby Nancy got in with that kind of criteria, and that's the same way that the Atari 2600, for instance, got into the Hall of Fame for being the breakthrough home video game set.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got Chris with us in New Berlin. Chris, hi.
How you doing today?
Good. What do you got for
the,
us, Chris?
The sidewalk chalk takes me back to when I was younger than my kids, even niece and nephews these days. All the parades with horses in them, especially West Dallas Western days with a lot of horses, or State Fair with the Clydesdale Parade. You take the chalk, you go out, you draw your circle, and put your initials in it, If the horse does its business, lands in your circle, you are a winner. I'm not saying that money didn't change hands occasionally. I'm not saying there weren't disputes about circle size and placement. But every parade, the kids love it. And I came close a couple times, but never quite landed it.
Oh, Chris, thank you. That is what I have not heard of. People get pretty creative with their sidewalk chalk, Chris.
That is new to me as well, and I am looking forward to the next parade I can participate in that way.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to bet a lot on that, though. But that's, I mean, that's part of the versatility of sidewalk chalk. That was pretty versatile there, but people could do a lot of things with it, art or games. And that's true of, I think, a lot of the, I guess, more rudimentary toys that I know you have in the National Toy Hall of Fame.
Sure, things like the cardboard box and the stick and the blanket.
That's right. Chris, thanks so much for that call. We'll go now to Doug with us in Madison. Doug, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What toy do you want to share with us, Doug?
Oh, I can't believe the balloon is not in the Toy Hall of Fame. I mean, if you've got the stick and the ball and the cardboard box, how about the balloon? With my grandkids, we did 3 years of all kinds of weird stuff with the balloon. Just bouncing it around, outside you could do it in the wind, indoors you bounce it, doesn't hurt anything. You could hit it with a stick, another Hall of Fame thing. So why not the balloon?
Is the balloon in the Hall of Fame, Chris?
No, it's not, but Doug can go to the website toyhalloffame.org and nominate the balloon right now so that it's in the queue to be considered for 2021.
Fantastic. And you're always looking. I know we just had this new class of inductees, but you're always looking for new nominations, right?
We are. Last year, we received more than 3,000 nominations for almost 700 different toys. So we want to hear from the broadest audience possible.
Thank you so much for that call at 800-642-1234. Doug, I'm looking back at the earliest inductees. There were some real classics. This is back in 1998. You've got Barbie, Crayola crayons, the Erector set, Frisbee, Lego, Monopoly. It seems like the teddy bear. A lot of slam dunks came in that first class.
It did. We sort of achieved critical mass by inducting about 10 classic toys that no one could debate at all.
We are talking about toys with Chris Bench, Chief Curator of the National Toy Hall of Fame in Rochester, New York, looking at some of the classics. They just inducted 3 new Hall of Fame toys, Sidewalk Chalk, Jenga, or the Baby Nancy doll. Well, now, how about you? What is your personal number one toy of all time? The fondest memory of playing with it as a kid, or maybe sharing it with your kids or grandkids? And do you want to know if a particular toy is in the National Toy Hall of Fame now or yet? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk about classic toys with Chris Bench. He's Chief Curator of the National Toy Hall of Fame at the Strong Museum of Play in Rochester, New York. This month, the Toy Hall of Fame added 3 new members, Jenga, the Baby Nancy doll, and Sidewalk Chalk. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite memory of a favorite toy that you played with yourself or with your kids or grandkids or nieces or nephews or students? Call in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to know if something's in the Toy Hall of Fame? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Back to your calls now. Russ is with us in Pleasant Springs. Hi, Russ.
Hi, my nomination, if it isn't already in there, would be Lionel Trains. I can remember the first one that was under our Christmas tree back in the early 50s when there was metal tinsel hanging off the tree and it would fall and you dragged it across the 3-rail track. It would short out the train and make it go backwards, and if you did it again, then it would make it go forward, often too fast and fall off the tracks. And if your father was watching... that was the end of those jokes. But Lionel Trains or Electric Trains got to be in there.
And Russ, I got to ask, did you just play with them as kids, or some people really get into them as grown-ups too? Did it stick with you?
Oh, yeah. I have hundreds of trains, and nice. I have a 20 by 20 foot layout up upstairs in the upper bedroom.
Well, we want to see a picture. Email ideas at WPR.org, Russ, if you can send us a picture. And thanks for calling in. All right, Chris, I've kept up the suspense. Is the Lionel train in the Hall of Fame?
It is. It was a 2006 inductee. And Lionel had a slogan, makes a man feel like a boy and a boy feel like a man. And Russ is proof that the joy of trains doesn't necessarily die out when you hit a certain age.
And don't try that shorting it out at home trick, kids. I think that's probably not super safe. But and it's Lionel trains in particular, not just generically electric train. But I mean, I guess I don't think I can name another brand. So I guess that makes sense, Chris.
Well, Lionel is certainly the best known brand, but the people who are fans of American Flyer toy trains feel that their favorite has gotten slighted. They're kind of like the Hot Wheels versus Matchbox division. People have strong feeling about their favorite style or gauge of toy train.
Is that American Flyer brand in there too, or is that still trying to knock on the door?
It's still trying to knock on the door. We'll see about 2021.
And if I'm not mistaken, both Matchbox and Hot Wheels have made it over the years. Am I right?
They did, but Matchbox was only last year. It took a long while for Matchbox to join Hot Wheels with the toy car category.
Well, I had both as a kid. Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. AJ in Green Bay is next. Hi, AJ.
Hey there. I'm just curious, are Tonka trucks in the Toy Hall of Fame?
Were you a Tonka guy, AJ?
As a kid, during Christmas, I was maybe 10, 11 years, somewhere in that neighborhood. I got my first Tonka trucks, and I moved a ton of dirt, sand, snow, anything you could think of that could put in the back of a dump truck with a payloader. There was a grader and a bulldozer. And there was a lot of fun with those.
AJ, thank you so much for sharing that. Are Tonkas in the Hall of Fame, Chris?
Yes, a 2001 inductee, so almost two decades in the Hall of Fame.
Fantastic. Thanks for that call. Now, that's a one, obviously, people have fond memories of them. I seem to recall from my days and the kids' days, they were also very durable toys. They literally lasted a long time.
They were built like iron. They had paint finish that was better than the one on your car. And yes, and they had such great details in advertising for them. If there wasn't anything that gave the scale away, it might actually be a full-size truck.
Thanks a lot for calling in, AJ, at 800-642-1234. We're talking about our favorite toys through the ages with Chris Bench from the National Toy Hall of Fame. That is in Rochester, New York. Still time for you to share your number one toy of all time at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Dave is with us in La Crosse. Dave, hi.
Yeah, how about cap guns? When I was a kid, we used to get rolls of caps, and we'd shoot each other with the cap pistols, and we'd bang them with rocks, and we'd double them over and have two or three of them go off at one time just to see who could make the biggest flash, the biggest boom.
Well, imagine that distinctive smell, Dave. I feel like it's still, I could conjure it up in my brain.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Dave, thanks a lot for that call. Chris, cap guns or cap pistols?
They are not yet in the Hall of Fame, but boy, that aroma, you are right. And I can almost scent it on my fingers from scratching my fingernail and making them pop.
Thanks a lot for the cap gun call. Now we'll go to Ray with us in Madison. Ray, hello.
Yes, I can't remember how many years ago. It's 10, 15 years ago. There was a game called Pigamania. They were little plastic pigs, and they were in different positions, and you could roll them like dice. And the position of the way they fell.
That was like your Yahtzee roll based on their position.
Yeah, yeah.
I know this because I had that game at one point. Now, Chris, I'm guessing this one, I feel like this had a short run, I'm guessing, Pig-O-Mania or something. I think it was something like that. Did not end up on the Hall of Fame.
It's not in the Hall of Fame. And in fact, I think Ray gets credit for being the first person to bring that up as a candidate. But we do have it amongst the 500,000 items here at the museum.
You do? Yeah. Talk a little bit about your exhibit. There's a lot of fun stuff there.
There is. And we are interactive and multi-generational. We fill an entire city block. There are exhibits about the joy of reading or exploring the world of play through nature. There are video games. There's a whole pinball arcade. There's dolls. You name it. If you can think of a way to play, we have a way of representing that in our exhibits and in our massive collection.
And I should mention, travel's not at the top of our list right now. You do have a virtual tour available, right?
That's right. A Google Street View takes you through the museum. You can at least get a feel for what it's like here at the Strong and make plans for those future days when we're all looking forward to traveling again.
All right. Well, our line's filled up while I wasn't looking there, so let's go back to some callers. Amber is with us in Hobart. Amber, hello.
Hey, I just wanted to bring up Beanie Babies. They were one of my favorite toys when I was a kid. I loved collecting them. We had a giant basket as a family.
And were you one of the families who, would line up at the stores when the new Beanie Babies came out? I remember that being kind of a thing at one point.
Unfortunately, we were not in a financial class that was able to do that. We had to get most of ours from garage sales.
Oh, okay. I think you made the right call then. I think that's the better way to get the Beanie Babies, actually. Amber, go ahead.
From that.
Amber, thank you so much. Beanie Babies, I would guess those are in the Hall of Fame, Chris?
They are not yet.
Not.
But I agree, Rob. Amber did the right thing rather than counting on her Beanie Baby investment to pay the kids' tuition to college.
Yeah. Right. Beanie Babies and Cabbage Patch, I remember being these crazes. Where people would, almost plunder stores to try to get them to the counter, the cash register before other people.
That's right.
Yeah. Thanks again for calling in, Amber. Cameron is with us next in Green Bay. Cameron, hi.
Hey, I grew up at the end of the 80s era, so technology was just coming out, and Tamagotchis, that was one of my favorite toys back in the day. I could never get it more than 7 to 11 days, but what about that toy?
And remind us what that was, Cameron. I remember them existing, but I never had one.
So Tamagotchi are a pocket or a keychain-sized digital device that you kept a digital pet on and clean up after. Yeah.
Cameron, thanks for the call. And Chris, did I see this was a finalist this year?
It was, and Cameron's right on top of it, and it was such a breakthrough as a virtual pet, leading to things like Furby and various sorts of robotic animals. The heartbreak of having your virtual pet die, that is a new twist that parents had to confront.
Thanks for the call. Time for one more caller. Steve is with us in Menominee. Steve, hello.
Hi. My name is G.I. Joe. I have about 51 of them at home that I collect now, mainly because my brother broke the first one I had 10 minutes after I got it for my 7th birthday.
Hold on. Big guys or the little ones that were part of my childhood?
The 12-inch G.I. Joe.
The big guys. Okay. Thanks a lot for that call. Is G.I. Joe, Chris, in the Hall of Fame?
He sure is. He invented the whole category of action figures. There had never been such a thing before, and the world has never been the same since.
Thanks for that call. Chris, remind people if they want to nominate their favorite toy, how do they do that?
It's easy. Go to toyhalloffame.org and you can nominate. And this is better than democracy. You can nominate your favorite every day between now and the end of next July when we finalize which 12 will be the finalists for 2021.
Chris, good to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Chris Bench is chief curator of the National Toy Hall of Fame at the Strong Museum of Play in Rochester, New York. We talked to them about the new bunch of inductees, Sidewalk Chalk, Jenga, and the baby Nancy doll. And keep sharing your favorite toys at the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, Black Friday and holiday shopping will look pretty different this year. A retail expert joins the show to tell us what to watch for, and you can join in with your plans. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Here's some nice seasonal work if you can get it. A review site called reviews.org is looking for a movie fan to watch 25 holiday movies in 25 days and review them. The winning candidate gets $2,500, subscriptions to lots of streaming services, and the title of Chief Holiday Cheermeister. I couldn't do it. Too much cheer. But Central Time producer Tim Peterson might be up to the challenge. Hey, Tim.
Hey there, Rob.
Okay, give us some movies from your list. If you had to watch or got to watch 25 holiday movies in 25 days, what are a few that would be at the top of your agenda?
I'm a big fan of The Muppet Christmas Carol, Rob. Our other producer, Bill Martins, one of our other producers, we're big fans of Jingle All the Way, the Arnold Schwarzenegger feature. That's definitely up there. I'm a big fan.
That's where "put the cookie down now" comes from, right? That's a catchphrase around Central Time, by the way.
Yeah,
even though I haven't seen the
absolutely.
Movie.
Absolutely. Who said you could eat my cookie?
Right.
It's very closely related. But also the cartoon The Grinch. I like that one. Also, The Preacher's Wife, Denzel Washington, Whitney Houston. Big fan.
Okay. All right. Would you be up to the challenge, though? 25 holiday movies in 25 days. Could you take it?
I could, and I may. I may apply for that gig. But I think I would probably watch a few of those on repeat to get up to 25.
Excellent. Tim, thanks a lot.
Sure thing.
This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.